4 years ago, Indiana moved ahead of Mississippi to become the third largest gambling destination in the country, behind only Nevada and New Jersey. Now, though, trouble signs are popping up from one end of the state to the other. First came the recession. Then, just as the economy was starting to recover, Indiana's casinos got hit with a wave of new competition from neighboring states. Gaming revenues are down, and they're sure to drop further unless Hoosier lawmakers have a legislative ace up their collective sleeve. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll look at what Indiana can do with the hand it's been dealt. We'll start, as always, with an update from the StateHouseFile.com, a service of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism.
Indiana's casino industry has been one of the state's most stable sources of funding, generating hundreds of millions of dollars annually for more than two decades. But increased competition from gambling operations in other states, and particularly a casino that just opened in Cincinnati near the state line, means that revenue is now falling at almost all locations. Senate Appropriations Chairman Luke Kinley says the state should act.
We charge that industry a pretty significant tax. And so now that we have legalized and authorized them to be here, it's only fair that we allow them to operate as a regular business.
The Senate has passed a bill that would let riverboat operations rebuild on land, authorizes live dealers at horse track casinos, and provides tax breaks to help the casinos invest in marketing and renovations. But the House has stripped the language allowing the dealers and the inland casinos. The move comes just a week after Governor Mike Pence started telling lawmakers that he can't support the measure. Final decisions about the issue won't be made until later this session. For Indiana Lawmakers and the StateHouseFile.com, I'm Leslie Weidenbender.
Back in a moment with our roundtable discussion on gaming. Odds are you'll learn a thing or two, so stay with us. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. Four locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
All right, I want to put this in terms we can all understand, and seeing as we're in the throes of March Madness, let's use the great American tradition, the office basketball pool, as our example. Let's say you're the person at your workplace who hands out the bracket forms, collects the corresponding entry fees, and calculates the results through each round of the tournament. For your trouble, you keep a small percentage of the winnings. Because your pool is the only one in the company, entries pour in from everywhere, not only your department, but from accounting and IT and sales and marketing and shipping, even HR. The kitty is huge, and so is your cut. What happens, however, if imitators in all those other departments decide to run their own pools? They start handing out little goodies to folks who fill out their brackets. Oh, you're done with your form? Just keep the pen. Pretty soon, of course, your once grand pool starts to look more like the NIT than the big dance. And yes, you end up with far less money in your pocket. What do you do then, other than cry? For advice, we turn to Republican Senator Phil Boots of Crawfordsville, the author of legislation designed to make Indiana's casinos more competitive. Democratic Senator Earlene Rogers of Gary, a vocal proponent of moving at least some of the casinos onto land. Republican Representative Bill Davis of Portland, chairman of the House Public Policy Committee, and therefore a key figure in how things play out this session. And former State Representative Mike Smith, who's headed the Casino Association of Indiana the past decade. And I thank you for being here on what turned out to be a pretty significant and newsworthy week on the casino front. Here's my analogy. Is that, how far off from reality is that from what we're facing here in Indiana with increased competition?
Well, obviously the surrounding states have expanded their gaming opportunities, and Indiana's relied heavily in the past on those from out of state to come to our venues.
As many as 50%,
yes,
is that right?
Yes.
Even more in some cases.
I mean, so Chicago is talking about a downtown casino. We have the Indian casino in Michigan. Hollywood just opened up in Cincinnati. So it's a huge issue right now for our gaming industry, and I think it's something that we need to address and move forward with, try to protect them.
Earlene Rogers, do you sense that everybody is at least pretty much on board with the notion that casinos are here to stay in Indiana? I mean, certainly back in 1993, as you'll recall, there were the debates about whether Indiana wanted to engage in such sinful activity. And now it's seen, now the governor refers to it as we've got to help Indiana businesses as we would help any other Indiana business.
Right, yeah. And I go back as far as 1989.
Back to the lottery, right?
Back to the first land-based casino bill that was filed in the state.
And also the constitutional change, which
was in 88. Right. And so then the gambling bill started coming in 89. And the city of Gary was asking for land-based casinos then. So we're about a quarter of a century ahead of everybody else when it comes to land-based casinos. But, I think it put casinos on a path in terms of where we are today, because that vote came out of the House. We got 46 votes out of the House on the very first try. I doubt that we could get 46 votes out of the House now when it comes to land-based casinos, in terms of looking at what happened in the House in public policy on yesterday.
Well, how about this? Let's ask that rhetorical question. If we didn't have casino gaming now, if this were sort of a repeat of 1993, is there appetite for it now in the General Assembly? Or this is another version of that question. Or is everybody pretty much accepting now of gaming as an industry?
I think that there's an appetite for what we have already in the House. I think that the way we did it, with allowing each county to decide for themselves whether or not they were going to have gaming, and the placement of that gaming along our borders and along the rivers was intentional to help people or communities that were otherwise struggling in a lot of cases. And it also allowed us to pick up a lot of additional patronage from the surrounding states, so we didn't depend entirely on Indiana citizens to fund the gaming operations. And from that, it's grown, and I think there is a little more acceptance of gaming throughout the state. It's here, we know it's here, and now the issue is how do the existing gaming folks become competitive or stay competitive. In return, we have a lot of jobs in gaming now. We have certainly a lot of income to the state through gaming. And so I think the idea is to see how we can make sure they stay competitive. And they're going to have to learn how to be competitive, because all of a sudden the surrounding states now have gaming.
And Mike Smith, you've watched this from the inside, so to speak. You left the General Assembly and went to the Casino Association back, I think, December of 2002?
Correct.
Sort of the heyday, or approaching the heyday, as casinos were still opening, coming online, and now, as we've heard, it's not so rosy. How bad, from your perspective, is the situation now? How dire is the threat?
Oh, I think the threat is real. If you look what's going on in Illinois, they've had several bills, some that have made it to the governor and been vetoed. I think they will get their act together, and they will expand gaming over there. It will be significant. They're putting already tens of thousands of machines in bars and taverns over there. I think you could see a Chicago downtown casino, one on the south suburbs, not too far from the Hammond property.
Which relies heavily on Chicago, right? There's shuttles that run 24 hours a day to Chicago area.
About 70%, I think, in Lake County, in terms of the persons that come from Illinois into Indiana to
then you've got the governor of Kentucky that's made it one of his top three priorities to pass gaming, and appointed a senator that had been blocking legislation to a judicial position. So the threat is
real. He's been trying since, 2007 to get that legislation through, Governor Beshear.
So I think, it's coming. It's real. And those areas of which we're in a competitive disadvantage in the tax arena specifically are some of the things that we really do need help with. And you look at gaming in a long perspective. When I first took this job, we were doing polling to find out how the public felt about gaming, and then the online the advent of poker being televised, and the acceptability of gaming just rose incredibly, even among those families that don't really do it themselves or don't want to do it. Somewhere around the 80 percentile, 85% think it's okay for other people to do it. So the acceptability of gaming, we are a huge gaming state with charitable gaming, $500 million, the lottery.
Are we still the third largest gaming destination according to the National Association, or have we lost our spot because of this uptick in competition.
Depending on how you look at it, we're probably pretty close to number one in the amount of taxes we pay. If you look at our local development agreements and all of our taxes, we probably pay a little more than all the casinos in Nevada pay Nevada. Incredible number, but from a gross gaming revenue, we've dropped to fourth. In fact, Pennsylvania has jumped ahead of even Atlantic City or New Jersey, so we are currently fourth in gross gaming revenue.
Mississippi keeps going down, down, down behind us, I suppose. As long as they stay right behind us, right? That's what you want. What happens if, rhetorical question, and I want to get into the substance of this week's hearing and the results, because that's certainly what everybody's talking about, but if Indiana lawmakers did nothing, just said, we're going to let market forces dictate, is there some equilibrium that would be reached at some point? Now, granted, it's gone from the state's share of, in terms of taxation, as Mike Smith just mentioned, has gone from, what, 614 or so million down to 520?
The state's share.
The state's right share. I mean, does it hit a bottom, or does it, the industry just disappear if people don't do anything? I'm just curious.
I believe fully that if we do nothing, there'll be some boats that will be out of business in the next 5 to 10 years. And that means, you know, we will lose significant revenue, significant jobs. So this is just an effort to try to maintain them. I don't see that this effort will actually potentially grow our revenue. I just think it will help them maintain the revenue. But as I say, certain boats right now are on the edge anyway as far as their gaming revenues. They're in the lows numbers, I mean. And so if we do nothing, then we will be watching. We'll be trying to figure out what we're going to do with these monstrosities that are sitting out here. And local communities will have to deal with that, and the unemployment that goes with it.
So at best, it's the reduced revenue. I think maybe Mike Smith, you at some point I saw use the term the new normal. This maybe at best would be the new normal. Is that a fair assessment?
I think this is like a lot of normal business cycles. I mean, as competition comes along, you have to learn to adjust. You have to learn to be more competitive. You have to have a better product than your neighbors or the people that you're competing with. This is a business. It's a business like any other business that we deal with. And in this bill, that's exactly the way we try to treat it. We're looking for ways that we can make this industry more competitive with the now competition that they have. They realize they have to step up their program also and be more competitive. And so we in the bill left advantages for example, the ability to deduct expenses for advertising or promotions that hadn't been there before.
These are the coupons that people
it's
get
what they,
for free
it's
play.
What they call the free play, but actually it's a business expense that all businesses have in advertising their products and trying to bring people in. Coupons for grocery stores is an example. In most normal businesses, that's an allowable deduction. In this case, it hasn't been. We're going to allow them to deduct up to $2 million a year.
And that would be both in-state. I know at one point there was a debate about whether they would be solely for out-of-state individuals or in-state as well. And this would
as the bill sets now, we leave that to the people who are doing it.
I'm still unable to understand. You got the boats now sitting next to land. And to remove that section of the bill that allows a boat to move onto land within the footprint of its property or adjacent to its property, then I don't get that differential that's there. If we're talking about allowing our casinos to compete and everybody around us is going to be on land, then why can't we move to land? I don't think that there is any objection. At least I haven't heard of any objection. I mean, it's just, you know, when I look at my boats back home, you know, I mean, you feel like you're on land anyway.
How about the notion, as Phil Booth's bill stated, and you can address it more articulately than I can, but it is if you have adjacent property, you already own it. Ostensibly, it would be where voters said they wanted it through the referendum
exactly
that you mentioned.
Exactly.
Why is that problematic? That measure is, of course, out of the bill at this point.
Well, I think strategically, the boats were placed where they are for certain purposes. One, through referendums, the counties agreed to have them there. Two, they were in areas that needed employment, that had were struggling employment-wise in that way, and it's been able to lift those communities up. To extend that now to land is simply another step to the large expansion of gaming that does cause a lot of folks heartache and problems, because the next step then is to move a casino to Indianapolis, a casino to Fort Wayne, a casino to all of those areas that in the beginning.
So if you thought there were a way to guarantee that they stayed on that adjacent property, I mean, as much of a blood oath as there can be in laws which are written and changed, would that be acceptable? Well, I'm just trying to figure out where the proverbial line is in the sand.
And that's exactly what we're going to try to find out, because when you say in the footprint for some, they can expand exactly where they're sitting. For others, they would have to cross highways, they would have to move because they were located on the rivers. It's not exactly the easiest thing to do. So now we have to decide what makes sense, what is the footprint, how far do we extend that, and are we simply allowing another step toward land-based casinos, which we did not agree with when we got into the casino business years ago.
What we were trying to do, I mean, I was there, you know, in 1989. And what we were trying to do, and the reason we went ahead and agreed with the riverboats is there was a safety angle. And during that time, there were all these myths about prostitution, about drugs, about the mafia. And Charlie Brown has the joke that he tells that we're on water because we all felt that the mafia couldn't swim. But
they're usually wearing concrete.
right. Okay. But you know, so when we look at our industry in this state, I mean, they have earned the right to be there based upon there haven't been any scandals, there have been no problems with safety. So, you know, after all these years, I think that they have earned the right to move on to land. And when you look at, I mean, you know, French Lick, I mean, that's a land-based casino.
And you don't want to just move in your district. You don't want to move just to the adjacent property.
I don't.
You
but
want
I was,
to go to
I was
the
going to
Morgan
sell to
Expressway
that. I was going 8094, which is one of the busiest highways in the United States. Okay, and catch some of that traffic there. We miss out a lot on the Chicago traffic because Hammond is right on the line. Next to that is East Chicago, and Gary is third over. Okay, and so we take the leftovers in Gary. So if we could move to 8094 and take advantage of all of those trucks and cars passing through there, I mean, we could increase the revenues of the state and help that city that was the trailblazer when it comes to gaming.
Yeah, and I want to get to another element of the bill, which has got a lot of attention, and now the removal of it got a lot of attention, which is for the racinos, the horse track-based casinos, which right now their table games are electronic or computer-driven, yes. And your bill would have had humans, the ability to have humans here. Why is that important to you?
Well, I think it's very important from a competitive situation standpoint that people like to interact with live individuals as opposed to an electronic individual, which you have no inner conversations with or whatever. I think that people like that. It makes it more attractive for the consumer, and it just puts us all on the level playing field, puts everybody,
it's
all the casinos and the racinos.
I mean,
racinos.
It's a job.
And
for
it's
somebody.
A jobs bill. It's 560 or 600 jobs, whatever number it is, that well-paying jobs. And as was pointed out in the committee yesterday, if we had a company who had come to us in the IEDC and said we want to locate our facility in Indiana and we're going to employ 600 people, we would bend over backwards to give them whatever breaks we could possibly provide to them. And that's what this is. This is actually opposite of what everybody, you know, every other industry is trying to figure out how to utilize technology to replace people. And these racinos have agreed to eliminate the technology and use people.
Right, yeah.
And so I think it's a great tool for them, and it's what we need to compete.
Smith, let me ask you something, because you're sitting there silent. I know you'd like to stay silent, because this is, in some ways, a bit of a pickle that you're in, because you have, there are 13 casinos, effectively, in the state, if you include the horse tracks and you include French Lick. Not everybody wants the same thing. I mean, it's not a monolithic industry, because when you hear some of your constituents, if you want to call it that, when they hear Phil Booth saying, we need humans at the Racinos, some of the people that have humans say, but you're cutting into my pocket. So how do you navigate this?
It's a very difficult situation because we do have, everybody has viewpoints of what will help them, and like the nature in any business, and especially one when you're dealing in a competitive, controlled environment. You know, it used to be a lot more controlled because we didn't have all these perimeter states coming in and trying to take market share away too. So it is a very difficult issue for me to handle.
Is there anything that would satisfy everybody in your camp?
Everybody is on board with trying to do something in the tax situation. That is something that's a universal thought. That
this would be overall rates, or would this be the so-called head tax with $3 per person for admission, or both?
Depending on what the supplemental tax would be to replace the $3 admission tax, that's because that at 3.45 made real winners and real losers. But the promotional credit is a big issue for us. Ohio can
deduct the coupons or advertising we were talking about a moment ago.
Ohio has full deductibility. Illinois is talking about including that in all their proposals. And the Native Americans don't have to pay tax, so it really doesn't affect them. So that is a real competitive factor. And we often talk about all the money that we're dealing with. You know, today we amount to approximately 1% sales tax. For our revenue, you'd have to replace that with about a 1% sales tax increase. But more importantly, it's the hundreds and hundreds of jobs. These are real people with real jobs, and we have some of these communities, especially along the Ohio, where we may employ 70% of the workforce in a particular county. So, you know, to have the tools to be competitive and probably for another show, the whole idea of what expansion is, you know, whether or not, you know, you have a limited number of licenses, looking at the lottery and a lot of the other things that take would be another really good show.
Before we leave, I would really like to talk about something good that the House did with.
We don't have time for good news. I'm getting signals here.
The revenue that came to the communities where the boats were docked.
Right.
You can remember that in the Senate Appropriations Committee, that was changed so that in 2 years. Those communities will no longer get those dollars, and so
that's what $40 million.
Right, $40 million.
They don't get the state guarantee.
Well,
they still get money.
Yeah, but they don't get the guarantee
even
that was there.
Even that's complicated.
Let's go back to your basketball analogy, okay? This is the big dance. These communities brought the state of Indiana to the big dance. Had it not been for them, there would be no casino gaming in Indiana.
That was an effort to show exactly what we're talking about when we talk about expansion. This is an industry that while it creates a lot of jobs, the income comes from tax-paying citizens. And the more we have that land base, the more that will be Indiana citizens that are paying that bill. And to offset that, the casinos were willing to give back to those communities. So while I understand the idea of all the jobs and those kinds of things, the money for this gaming comes from Indiana citizens.
We will be watching. Wayne Newton, I think, is warming up in the casino lounge right now, so we better get out there fast if we're going to get a seat. Thanks all for being here for this discussion of a very lively topic, needless to say. Again, my guests have been Republican Senator Phil Boots of Crawfordsville, Democratic Senator Earlene Rogers of Gary, Republican Representative Bill Davis of Portland, Chairman of the House Public Policy Committee, and Mike Smith, President of the Casino Association of Indiana. New legislation would give you the freedom to farm, but not the freedom to take pictures of farming. That's on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight and its sister publication, Indiana Gaming Insight. Ed, you've been there since 1989. You know this better than I do. Ask yourself a question and answer it.
I think that the key here is really expansion, and Bill Davis talked about that. Representative Davis alluded to it. And here we've got a governor who, for the first time, is really explaining to us what he thinks expansion means. And that's been a help in the last week or so to legislators. But expansion is something different to everybody, whether it's a governor or a legislator. And we saw that even signing a bill into law allowing the slots at the tracks to Governor Daniels wasn't an expansion of gambling for a number of different reasons. But yet allowing, for example, a live table game at the racinos instead of the electronic table games is expansion of gambling to Governor Pence. So we're starting to see some of these lines that you were talking about during the roundtable being drawn.
Now, Mike Pence, though, unless I'm mistaken, has not said explicitly he would veto this, what he perceives as an expansion. How significant is that? Is he leaving some wiggle room here?
Well, I think he's always said that. He believes in the status quo. Gambling is the public policy of the state, and he wants to treat these businesses just about like any other business. But again, he has some objections to some of the expansion issues in the bill, but not to the tax breaks that are being offered in some of the different versions. And it's very interesting how this bill has changed from being essentially a kitchen sink, all kinds of advantages for the casinos and to expand, literally expand gambling in the initial Phil Boots introduced bill to a bill that really hurt local governments and kind of made up that money from the state to the local governments on the backs of the local governments to something that's much more moderate right now. And it will be changed again a few more times before the end of April.
And if it does stay, for argument's sake, just the restoration or preservation of the local funding and then some tweaking of the tax issues, is that enough to satisfy casino operators who say, help us?
They'll take something. They'll take anything at this point, I think, but it's not going to make a huge difference for them.
All right. Thanks, Ed, as always. Appreciate your insight. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwantes, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and thestatehousefile.com, I thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again at the same time next week. Until then, take care.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. A powerful economic engine and a technology conduit from Chicago to Louisville. Purdue Research Park, the idea economy is here.